Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I'm going to try something new, so I'll be interested to hear your reactions to this. Doing a little team building breakdown. So I'm taking one of my earlier Superflex drafts. I think I had done maybe one or two before this, but this was a 2019 startup draft. So this was like early in the year, maybe like this time, maybe like a little probably like February, early March of that year. So pre-rookie draft and pre, you know, you could take rookies, but you couldn't, it was pre-draft, so you didn't know where their pedigree was. So it plays into this a little bit in terms of how I went with the build. I'll say before I get started, these things are always really interesting because you look back and see some of the decisions you made, some of the mistakes that you made in hindsight, and you see the process change. And that's one thing with this draft, as I've sort of doing this exercise, just looking back, I've changed a lot. And there's a lot of mistakes that I made in here that if I could go back now, I wouldn't have missed. And I wouldn't have made. And wouldn't have made in the sense of profiles that I missed and profiles that I'm much more on now. And so it's a useful exercise to really go back and check and keep things on. So I'm looking back with this at the lens of like, all right, what are these issues and sort of how can we capitalize on these things going forward? So I drew 106 in the startup draft. I made two trades in the startup draft. So I traded 106 and 1007, and I got back 212, 301, and a future first. That person took Alvin Kamara, and I ended up taking Russell Wilson and Amari Cooper, and the pick ended up being 106. So that was J.K. Dobbins, who I selected there. So nice return. Again, there wasn't a clear loser of that deal. So that was a pretty nice return there for sure. So I waited until 207 to take my first pick. It was Mike Evans. Hard to argue with that. Again, Wilson and Cooper at the 2-3 turn. So again, I have three picks essentially in that like 6 or 7 pick span there, which is pretty nice. Allowed me to get ahead a little bit. So I got two wide receivers, feeling pretty good. And I made a splurge pick at running back, which was not something I would have typically done at the time. It's a Kerryon Johnson. Plenty of misses that I made with that pick, a lot of different ways. I still think that the process was right in terms of liking him. I think maybe the issue was, hey, going a little bit too early at a position that isn't all the way there if you haven't made it yet. So guys I passed on in that range, like Matt Ryan, Stephon Diggs, Dalvin Cook, and they were the same draft class. Dalvin Cook was coming off an injury. I take that back. Sorry. They were not the same draft class. Keenan Allen's in that range, Tyreek Hill. Kyler Murray, actually, the rookie, was in there too. So those are guys that I passed on there. Came back to me at 407, and I took Brandon Cooks. I remember making that pick thinking I should have done it at the third because I wanted him. And he got back to me at the fourth. And I sort of look back, like Dak Prescott was there at 412. That was a huge miss. That was a mistake that I missed then. Won't miss now. Again, that was that year's basically Aaron Rodgers of this past year. So he was coming off a little bit of a down year, but had some really high end accomplishments already in his career. Josh Jacobs notably went in there in that range as well. After I took Cooks again, this was pre-draft, so I didn't have all the information. Didn't have another quarterback, so I went and I waited and waited on it. I thought I had the luxury of waiting because there were guys that I like: Jameis Winston, Kirk Cousins, and Matthew Stafford specifically. They go right in a row. Jameis Winston, Kirk Cousins, I'm on the clock. I take Matthew Stafford. So lock in my quarterback. So in the top five rounds, I've got six picks: Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, and Kerryon Johnson. So fading at that point, that I've basically got a roster looking pretty good at that point. Passed on Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen with that pick. Again, I would do it again. I think the process was right there. It just didn't turn out perfectly. I would have probably much rather had either of those two guys now than Stafford, but I think it was the right probability bet. I will say, if you sort of look in this range, maybe this year's not the year because there's not a ton of guys going in this range, but if you want to sort of splurge, you know, maybe going four quarterbacks in the top 10 rounds. You can sort of splurge in this range a little bit and take another guy. I think that's an interesting process in this range. Get to the sixth round, and you know, so there's rookie tight ends available. Allen Robinson was there, and I didn't take him, which is a mistake. I took David Njoku. Again, I thought the process was right. I liked the profile. It just didn't turn out well. Passed on notable guys like Calvin Ridley, Allen Robinson in that range, Robert Woods, as a matter of fact, too. Passed on Cooper Kupp, Hockenson, Noah Fant as well. So that was kind of a miss. Passed on Derrick Henry as well. He was going almost a full round after Njoku. So that's a big miss that I made there. You know, one thing I will say, especially early in startup drafts, and this is something I've really reminded myself of lately, is in March or February when you're making these draft picks, you don't need to start a lineup. And this is a good example of that. Okay, this is a really good example of you don't need to start a lineup at this time of year. So pick the right players, and you can figure out lineup later on. Njoku is an example of, hey, I like the profile. In hindsight, did I need to take a tight end there? Could I have waited? You know, that's something I think we need to constantly keep in mind. Guys like Goddard went later. You know, Austin Hooper went later. He would have been a guy, in hindsight now, I would have been much more on, right? So those type of guys, I think that's an interesting takeaway from this exercise. Jared Cook went way later too. So those guys I would have been on now, probably would have been comfortable fading Njoku. All right, get to the eighth round. Will Fuller's there. I take Will Fuller. Notably, I took him ahead of David Montgomery, who was a rookie coming in. So, again, that was pre-David Montgomery being really good in my mind. Took him ahead of Tyler Lockett, too. So that's a whiff. Lockett's been kind of undervalued ever since this point. So Philip Rivers as quarterback three at 906. Again, that was a historically a good range, 7, 8, 9 to get a quarterback in Superflex. Derek Carr went later on. Again, if I could go back and do this again, I think I probably end up with either another quarterback or I end up with another running back, probably at the expense of that tight end position. I think maybe that middling tight end one's probably a little bit of an overplayed strategy by me in this era of my life. Now I sort of look and say, all right, well, you've got Fant and you've got Hockenson. I think they're better profiles and better situations than you have with a guy like Njoku at that period of time. All right, so heading into the double-digit rounds, again, I didn't have a 10th. The person took Tevin Coleman with that pick, which I don't think was a horrible pick, you know, given what he knew at the time. I take Sammy Watkins at 11:06 just because I'm a masochist and can't get over it. I just can't let it go. And I think I mentioned too, I did trade out of my 7th round pick as well, as I traded 7:06 and for 12:10 and a future first. So I'll get to that in a second. 12:07, take Latavius Murray. That's a solid pick in that range. I get to 12:10 and I take rookie Damian Harris. And he was notably, you know, pretty significantly down in this draft behind guys like Darrell Henderson, Paris Campbell. He was behind Drew Lock, Irv Smith. So I actually probably got a little bit of draft equity in terms of he was way behind Hakeem Butler, for example, right? If you're drafting startups right now based on where rookie wide receivers are going to go, remember Hakeem Butler at 808 in this draft is a huge disaster. So just keep that in mind if you're doing that right now. But again, that was decent equity. I take Mike Weber, which was a horrible equity bet for a running back. I liked his profile coming out. There's just probably stuff there we didn't know. Notably passed on Austin Eckler there, who went a couple picks later in the 13th round. So Damian Harris, 12:10, Mike Weber, 13:06. So that trade of N'Keal Harry was at the 7:06. It was N'Keal Harry for Damian Harris and a future first. That future first, 105, that player, DeAndre Swift. So feel good about that in hindsight. All right, go to the 14th round here. Again, it's kind of no shock. I take Kalen Ballage. No real big misses in this range either, so you don't feel horrible about it when you look back at some of these. Giovanni Bernard, 15 in the 15th round, which is a successful pick in my mind, especially with who's going around him. Ryan Fitzpatrick at 16:07. again, there's starts there. Has it been a huge fantasy success? Not really, but helpful in that quarterback room for me. So can probably call that one a success too. And Terry McLaurin, DJ Chark, the two big guys in this range. Again, McLaurin was a rookie. He's like well into the late third round, if not fourth round of rookie drafts at this point. Daniel Jones is in this range as well. So, you know, be monitoring potential draft pedigree guys. I don't think there's a Daniel Jones in this class, but I guess we should be open to it if it's a Mac Jones potentially falling, right? That could be a guy. I took Deonta Foreman, which was an unequivocal miss at 1706. Jamal Williams was a guy I could have taken in there as well. Devontae Parker in that range. Again, I wouldn't go back and change that. Ronald Jones is a guy I missed in that range and would like to have had back. Delanie Walker at 1807. I think I got a year out of him, and then he kind of exited stage right. So, you know, that's you kind of pair guys that are really productive with guys that have falling market value. Pair them with younger guys on the up and come. Didn't work out on either branch of that decision tree. So, those things happen. Jay Ajayi, 1906, had some hope that he would come back and potentially be helpful. Wasn't particularly helpful. So that's a disappointment as well. Ryan Tannehill's in this range, 1910. Again, maybe high pedigree backup quarterbacks is a story there. No other real misses that I made. Chris Warren, 20.07. He was a starter for a period of time in Oakland, the previous iteration of the Vegas Raiders. That was kind of around this time, so he was the guy there. He ends up getting cut. Other guys here, Ryan Nall, 21st round. Again, we're way into the backup range. This is like Jalen Richard type range. Adrian Peterson's in this range. Gus Edwards is actually in this range, which could have had him. Took Malcolm Brown at 2207. Again, there's not much here. Cole Beasley is a notable name from this range, but it's like Taylor Gabriel, Travis Homer, Keith Kirkwood, right? I mean, it's not very much in terms of help. Devontae Booker at 2306. Again, helped. He's helped. I don't know if I've held him the entire time, but I think I might have. I'd have to go back and look. But he's been a guy that's sort of been on and off my rosters across my dynasty leagues. You get some one injury away action out of him, hasn't really hit for much help. But again, you look at some of the other guys in this range: David Sills, Willie Snead, Philip Dorsett, Keyshawn Johnson, Mykal Hardman. This was pre-draft. So again, I'm not really missing out on much. LJ Scott was a guy I had some hope out of Michigan State. Total bust. Didn't really miss on anyone at that 24th round. Wayne Gallman, 25th round. That's nothing but a success, especially with the guys in that range. It was a smashing success. Vernon Davis, if memory serves, he had maybe 1 year after this that he played. Again, nothing much in this range that I missed on. You're looking at maybe, if you get one guy in this range, that's pretty good. That's nice. But yeah, it's not particularly helpful. 27th round, Alfred Blue. Notably, Tony Pollard went in this range. That's like fifth or sixth round of rookie pick valuation. So that's a pretty successful pick this deep. And then Demarie Crockett from Mizzou is my guy in the 28th round. So that's really the totality of it in terms of how my draft went. Some big takeaways, I think largely, I got the receiver stuff right early on and would do that again. Quarterback, basically I roster every one of those guys in the top five rounds. So those six picks are all still on my roster. And I basically went, my goal early on in a rookie draft typically is, hey, let's hit five out of the first six rounds. Right? If we can get five hits in the first six rounds, I think we're doing really good. And I hit that mark. So Evans, Wilson, Cooper, Cooks, and Stafford. Missed on KJ, missed on Joku, but that's a classic example of, hey, it's a lot easier to hit five times in the first six rounds when you pick seven times. It is much harder when you're picking five times or when you're picking six times. You give yourself a little bit more leeway, a little bit more wiggle there. So yeah, that's certainly, again, I kick the can, give myself some options down the line in terms of taking away a couple of picks in the seventh and the 10th round to facilitate those trades to get future picks. Again, that those paid off in spades. And then I sort of look here. I think reasonable shots at running back. Maybe the lower pedigree running back, the Bellage, the Webbers. If I had known Weber was going to basically go in the seventh round, I wouldn't have taken him. And he's one that is a cautionary tale in terms of there wasn't anything super to love about his profile. Just there was a lot of things to like. Sometimes those can really blend in. So maybe there was some off the field stuff. He was kind of a tweener size too. So similar themes. Tight end can be pretty lucrative in the double digit rounds. Guys that are quarterbacks that have a history of some success, whether that's fantasy success or whether that is draft pedigree that for some reason that they're falling. Those are interesting guys in that range as well in terms of guys that can pay off. Fitzpatrick, Tannehill for sure. So 4-9, not a great start, not ideal in terms of starting. But some things to look forward to. So I kind of missed in the mid rounds there from basically round 6 through, 11. Didn't get a ton out of that. Rivers was fine. Fuller has the upside, but missed on Joku. I didn't have a couple picks in there, and then missed on Watkins. So again, heading into the next season, kind of had some holes there to fill, tight end in particular, which sort of becomes a theme at a point in this story. So I didn't actually make many trades into the off season. I basically sat pretty still, which is becoming more and more common for me in terms of in terms of putting together my roster. It tends to look a little bit different, and in its difference, it presents plenty of value opportunities for me, but a lack of some interest on the other side. So that is something that I have found. I've been trying to really this year focus a lot on making, getting involved in deals, and making a much more concerted effort at this time of year to be involved with, with moving around the board and those sorts of things. So that is something that I'm definitely making a concerted effort to do this year. So on the clock, I make a deal. I basically throw in a fourth. I get a fourth basically back, move down two picks. So the whole deal is 203 and 303, and I get 205, 312, and 410. The primary pieces in there, he moved up to take Keyshawn Vaughn. I moved back, took A.J. Dillon, and got Cole Kmet in my move up, which I wouldn't have got him. Troutman went right after him. So that was successfully getting inside the Cole Kmet tier, most definitely. So really excited about that one. And then a trade that has made it into the analytics of Dynasty post Saquon Barkley injury. And I made a lot of different approaches and thoughts about how to sort of make deals for him. I just asked the guy, he said he'll take a first and a third. I said, okay, I'll do that. And so I did that deal. So I had Barkley, gave up the future picks, which I am loath to do, but I will do it if it is going to get me a top 30 asset. That is essentially my price point. I think the person's got to be a top 2-round pick to make those deals. Just in my mind, just in my level of comfort, like I need that level of certainty on trading away that pick, and was able to do it. I was able to get a first rounder. So pick ends up being like mid round. I think it's 106, something like that. I just missed the playoffs this year. In 2020. I just I was right on the boundary, but there's a funky quirk in the scoring. I made the playoffs. I made the playoffs, but because of a funky quirk in the scoring, I did actually fall in at pick seven. I fell right at pick seven. Okay. I lost in the first round of the playoffs, put up a $1.44, lost in the first round of the playoffs. Sorry, I got my ears confused on my pick ordeals. So I had 107. So basically gave 107 and 307 for Saquon Barkley. Do it in heartbeat. Do it again, knowing what I know now. Couldn't do that deal today. You know, probably could trade him for 102 plus if I wanted to and get all that return. Again, it's just a really good asset. We'll see if I hold it or if I keep going with Barkley, but lots of options there and definitely an uptick in valuation. And sitting here now, very happy that I have that. It cost me basically nothing on my odds last year. It was a perfect dynasty trade for me. Other trades I made in here, down the stretch of the season, I was really, really struggling with tight end. No surprise, given I had David Joku and Delanie Walker as my guys. I picked Cole Kmet rookie draft. Again, nothing really helpful there in terms of moving the needle for me in terms of odds of winning a championship. And I had Damian Harris, who was coming on at that point. Again, I questioned some of the upside with Damian Harris, but he was becoming much more valuable at the point. Eric Ebron was fully involved in the Pittsburgh offense, and Leonard Fournette was actually a one injury away guy. So I constructed a deal which I thought was pretty interesting and gave me a lot of different outs, and it gave me a lot of upside in multiple different ways. Again, it didn't end up working out for me, but I think it was right, and it didn't end up working, you know, moving the needle in terms of championship or anything like that. But I gave Damian Harris for Leonard Fournette and Eric Ebron. The thought was Ebron fills a need for me. That's how I like to fill a need, just give me a guy that will fill a need. And he did in terms of being a tight end, fringe tight end one, and was a big uptick over what I was putting out there. But also give me some variance, right? If to win a championship on this team, I was probably going to need like a really high-end outcome from somewhere. And Leonard Fournette was the type of player that I thought I could get that from. I could get a 25-30 point game in a playoff matchup that could tilt the odds for me. And, you know, ultimately it didn't end up happening, but I still think as I sit here right now, I'm in a better position for that trade. Again, I like Damian Harris quite a bit, but I question some of the upside situation for him. So I look forward to seeing where Fournette lands in 2021, whether that's trade or back with Tampa. You know, at the very worst, he's a one injury away guy. And at the very worst, it's basically him and Harris are neutral. Now, Harris wasn't really going to move the needle for me all that much. And so that was I made an early exit in the playoffs. Rivers retired, so that's kind of critical to this. So I had Wilson. I had Stafford gets the uptick in valuation because of the move to the Rams. And so I said, okay, like that's interesting in terms of, I've got two guys, but I kind of need a third. Don't really have the rookie picks to do that with. So I ventured around some trade options. And one player that I've been a little bit curious on in terms of his ultimate upside is J.K. Dobbins. Like the player, don't necessarily love the fantasy situation long term with his like elite upside. And I have some other guys. I have Taylor. I have Swift. I have Dylan. I have a variety of guys that could fill in as a fourth starter in a week to week. Now, if you're counting games, basically in that fourth starter range, and you're adding up, you know, some injuries and buys and that sort of thing, right? To fill in that four starter, I really need to have, a variety of different options. And I've got Fournette and I've got Dylan and I've got, you know, some other of these guys. I've got Kerryon Johnson, a one injury away guy behind Swift. I've got Geo still. I've got a bunch of these guys that I can use to potentially fill in for me in you know, week to week, and I've got some depth at wide receiver. I could sort of figure that out. I've got Madison. I've got Devontae Booker. I've got Latavius Murray as well. So I had some depth to deal with at running back, and I said, let's figure out a way to, you know, get me. I kind of need another quarterback. I need to figure out a way to make quarterback a little bit better. And so what I did was I traded Dobbins, and this couple of interactions back and forth. Basically, it became I gave Dobbins for Jameis Winston, Tyler Higbee, and 105. So I get back into that top five picks. That gives me a shot at a quarterback. Gives me some pick flexibility. Again, maybe I hold the pick, maybe I don't, but it gives me some flexibility. It gives me Jameis Winston as an option at quarterback. Gives me Tyler Higbee as an option for tight end. Again, trying to, at the thrift shop level, get some tight end help. I like Winston's odds of starting this year. Add it all up, and it gives me some options. I like Dobbins. He's a running back four for me. Again, he's a pretty good running back four. I'm in a pretty good situation with him. But I think this situation gives me a little bit more options. And as you'll see, I sort of make another deal here. In the as MFL rolls over, the picks become more of a reality, gotten more and more into the trading market. So I sort of sat here with this team, and I'm rolling with Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, and Brandon Cooks is my top three. I've got Will Fuller as a four, but a way to really make that better would be to bump those guys down. So how could I potentially do that? Well, Devontae Adams is on the market, and this trade actually came to me, and sometimes the best trades are the ones that come to you, and this was one of those ones for me that was a really, really good trade that came to me. Was offered, let me see here, just misreading it, was offered Devontae Adams and Cole Kmet. Devontae Adams in 311 for Cole Kmet 105 and 207. At face value, I like the deal. Again, that is the wide receiver one or two in Dynasty, probably. You know, a top five guy, depending on how you value them. He's way up there for me. And I'm getting him for essentially the cost of, I mean, at the very least, it's the top skill position guy in this draft. More likely, it's the second or third skill position guy in this draft is basically the asset I'm giving up, you know, plus a couple other pieces. I hate being out rookie picks, but I have a really good opportunity here to make a trade for a guy that really, really, really can move the needle. I said, okay, I'm sort of interested in this, but let's see if I can make it better. I offer back, I'll do Kmet, I'll do 107. I'll do 207, but you have to sort of change a couple of things. You've got to give me Zach Ertz and 305 instead of that 311. So I basically move up a half a round in the third round. Again, that could be inside a line. So we'll see. And it's an accept. So now it puts Evans down as a three. It puts Cooper down as a two, you know, however way you want to order those guys. Bumps Brandon Cooks into a really good four spot. And Fuller into the five. And so now I don't really have to as much depend on Fuller. Again, if now I have a strength that I can deal from, right? If Fuller lands somewhere in free agency, it makes other guys expendable. It's a really good situation all around for me. So really excited about how that all came together. And so now I'm sitting here and I'm sort of looking ahead and say, all right, now I've got some ability to, to really do some damage. So if I'm looking at this team, you know, things I'm looking at here going forward, this is a situation where, you know, I have actually done my, I talked about this in a prior episode. Basically, I go through and try and, do a to-do list, things I need to do, things I'm looking to do. You know, things I need, quarterback three if Winston's not a starter. I need to figure that situation out. Guys that I have on the roster. I didn't mention every roster move that I made, but I have Ryan Fitzpatrick still. I picked up Andrew Luck in free agency. Nick Mullins is on the bench as well. Rivers, I just have to cut. Alex Smith is in. Was a free agent add as well. So I have, you know, maybe a 50% shot at maybe something less than that. I don't know. I guess I have an injury away quarterback probably in Fitzpatrick or Alex Smith. Like the two of them, they probably add up to a 50% shot at being at least an injury away guy. I like Winston's ability to earn a starting job. And there it sits. So again, if Winston's not a starter, you know, maybe that's a situation I can make a move from depth. You know, if Fournette becomes a starter, if Dylan becomes a starter, then I've got some really good depth at the skill positions I can trade from. That's a situation I can address it from. The tight end position is basically gone from, this is I think notable, it's gone from David Joku at the beginning and Delanie Walker to it being it's still David Joku, but I've got Tyler Higbee, I've got Zach Ertz, I've got Eric Ebron. So now I have some options. Again, they're flexible too in terms of it's two PPR. And I could play a flex scenario if I need one of those guys. But I've got some bodies. And again, one of the things I think about this time of year too is give me guys that can potentially give me access to a different tier. Right, so whether that's putting two of them together or using a guy at a different tier, using a pick swap, something like that, to either move down or move up. I think a lot about that, like stacking your roster with some guys that have some different levels of value isn't the worst thing, right? Obviously, we want 12 first round startup picks. Obviously, that's what we want. But if you have a hole at a position, you know, fixing it with some volume can create a situation where you actually have a fix, but it also creates options for you in terms of roster building and moving it around. So that's really where the roster sits right now. Again, it's gotten better. I think it gives me a shot here this year. Again, if I think the big keys to this are, you know, continue to work the churn the back end of the roster in terms of, you know, I do have some guys to cut. I just haven't cut them yet at the off chance that, I don't know, Philip Rivers pulls a Brett Favre or something, or Andrew Luck comes back. I don't think either of those things is going to happen. But yeah, just holding them right now until I'm actually absolutely forced to make a cut. But I've got guys like Eno Benjamin here who, hey, maybe he's a one injury away guy. That could be interesting. Some other guys here, Giovanni Bernard's potentially another one injury away guy. So is Booker. Kerryon and Madison, two of my favorites. Latavius Murray. So this is kind of a who's who in terms of AOD roster build. They've got Divine Osigbo is probably cut as well. So I'll be firmly under the 28-man roster. Once I fill in my picks, you know, I should be right inside that line in terms of guys that I would want to cut. And I'll be pretty good. So that's really the – I thought I would do one of these. You know, I might do some more of these. I'm going through this sort of self-reflective process with some of my teams and some of my players and past decisions. So that'll be something that we can – I can incorporate more of if people are interested in team building, you know, maybe like a once a week type thing or something like that. But I do think, you know, people have asked, you know, what are you targeting at certain points of drafts? Sort of how you doing it? You know, how do you sort of get to a volume running back build? How do you sort of move team build, some of those things? So I don't necessarily love the narrative storytelling of making it about me, but I think sometimes talking about it in that sense gives a better team building picture here. So. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of Strategy Team Build. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.